The Movements is a leftist history and politics podcast. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Movements Pod. Ahoy there, comrades. All right, consider this take two. We recorded for a while and fucked it up and lost it forever. So, welcome to the surprise edition of Stalin for Time. We will be premiering the Russian Revolution podcast part one tomorrow on January 1st. But today, I just decided last minute that fuck it. I want to talk about The Last Jedi, talk about some Star Wars, which has been bringing out a lot of strong feelings in a lot of folks. But yeah, so it's going to be a little bit of a change of pace. I'm joined here by my good friend, Miranda. Miranda, can you introduce yourself for a bit?
Sure. So I'm basically a student of contemporary Middle Eastern politics. I like to think of myself as a once and future academic. Hopefully I'll be returning to academia soon. But right now I work at a nonprofit in DC, which comes with the expected ups and downs. And also just kind of a side interest of mine has been for years now, pop culture, you know, film, television, music videos, actually, have been a big niche interest of mine lately.
You've taught me about some incredible music videos
that I have
never known about.
And, you know, I'm interested in how that material kind of reflects American politics, American attitudes, especially American attitudes about the global war on terror and the rest of the world. So Star Wars is a definitely appropriate thing for me to be here to talk about. And I think it fits into your theme as well, because, you know, popular movements, the resistance.
Oh, absolutely. Word. And, so you also, in addition to doing a lot of pop culture, and cultural study sort of stuff, you also have another expertise, which is actually what I originally wanted you to be on the show to talk about. And it will happen someday.
Someday.
But yeah, tell us about your other field that you are studying.
You mean contemporary Middle Eastern politics?
Yeah, that's the one.
The first thing I said.
Oh, fuck. Sorry. We've been having technical difficulties. I'll edit that one out as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I specialize particularly in Levantine countries. So Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, Israel. I've lived in Syria and in Lebanon and in Israel and in Egypt, actually. And what's always fun is when I can find a way to kind of do both at once. So Speaking of music videos, I wrote a 40-page paper in 2016 about a Kurdish-American pop star who defeats ISIS in her music videos.
I mean, it worked.
Yes, that's what did it. It was the high heels that did it. But yeah, you can find some of my Middle East stuff through my Twitter, which is just at Miranda W. Meyer. And you can find pop culture stuff on a site that I share with a friend of mine, which is called Phantasmatic Radio. And the concept of the site is that we both are kind of academically trained and interested in popular culture, and we want to try to bring that training to bear on pop culture and kind of share those insights with people, but without the impenetrable highfalutin language that often goes along with academic writing. So you can find stuff about Hannibal, about Black Sails, which is a show that should be better known, and I think your audience would really enjoy.
It's about pirates, right?
It's about gay proto-Marxist pirates.
I think we should just watch that right now instead of doing
this. I have been trying for months, Kenny. Hannibal, Black Sails, Law & Order SVU, we have stuff up there about that. And it hasn't been updated in a little while, but we are planning to revive it. So that would be Phantasmatic, phantasmaticradio.com.
Word. All right. So let's just jump right into Star Wars for now. I'm one of those people who did everything in their power to just enjoy a movie and not make a whole thing out of it, which is, I mean, we lived through the prequel trilogy, and those were dark days.
I've mostly blocked it out, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't recognize the legitimacy of the prequel entity.
It's not canon.
And I'm just really excited to be living in a time where Star Wars is good again. And yet there's a whole lot of people who just unabashedly hate the movie. And, like, I get it if it's, you know, you can't get over some of, like, the less refined aspects of the Star Wars movies. I get that. But then there's people who just unabashedly think this movie was garbage. What's wrong with them?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to armchair diagnose anybody. But I think that I have a general theory that, like, because we live in a highly, highly mediated world, we have trouble kind of engaging with texts, you know, as in movies or shows or articles or whatever it might be, even like a celebrity's public persona, as just sort of material that you can take apart and parse and interact with however you want. And we keep insisting that everything represents something. So, you know, anything from your social media presence, sort of being like, I post about these things to show that I'm this kind of person, to the second any high profile movie comes out, there's this like rash of think pieces about it that seek to immediately like pin it down and say, this is what this means. This is the message of it. This is what it means for the fans, for America, for the franchise, for global warming, for 2017, you know, et cetera. There's a really good article that I don't know if you do, you do show notes?
I don't.
Okay. Well, if you did, I would say I would send it to you to put in the show notes, but...
Oh, I thought you were talking about some blog. No. I include some very basic show notes, okay. But yeah.
There's a really good article I read recently about the proliferation of think pieces with titles that include the phrase, we need right now. Like, this is the movie we need right now.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And so I think that people have very specific ideas about what they wanted from Star Wars or what they wanted Star Wars to represent, because it is a huge franchise, because it is iconic, because the bigger and more iconic a franchise is, the more pressure kind of is automatically brought to bear on it in terms of representation and various kinds of politics, whether diversity, identity, capitalism, you know, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, this is a movie that's trying really hard to actually not sort of be a symbol of something. It's trying to actually engage with symbols and say, what does it mean to kind of have these symbols that we hold so dear? And is that a good thing? And so I think that's a really hard thing for a lot of people to swallow, especially a very kind of canon-headed, memorize the entire extended universe, you know, kind of obsessive Star Wars fan.
Star Wars Legends, please.
I'm what they call a casual. I have only ever watched the movies, so you're gonna have to.
That's fine. I don't think the novels are as good as I remember them. I don't plan on finding out, though.
Yeah, I'm never gonna. That's not happening. but you know, at the same time, like, I've seen a lot of backlash, kind of from the opposite direction, from a very kind of progressive, like with a capital P. Tumblr crowd that is angry because the movie didn't do exactly what they wanted with Finn or with Poe or with Finn and Poe, and has sort of immediately said, therefore, it's garbage. And I just think that this, in as much as a blockbuster possibly can, this movie is kind of oriented against the whole way that we consume blockbusters.
Yeah.
So it causes a lot of, I don't know if I want to say cognitive dissonance, but just like confusion, because it's like I can't immediately go make a YouTube video about what this means for the canon, or like I have to actually think critically about Luke Skywalker, you know, God forbid.
I think one of the angles about it that I really appreciated personally was, I mean, I'm not using an original concept here, but the idea that it subverted and complicated the mythology and all our expectations for what Star Wars is supposed to be about. And for me, I found that to be one of the more liberating aspects of the movie. Like, I mean, like I said, I'm over Star Wars at this point. I'm just here to see a good movie that'll make me feel happy.
Yeah.
But like, I had an emotional reaction to, you know, seeing these characters that I grew up with, And with seeing these, like, questions answered about, like, what happened, you know, afterwards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, why is Luke, you know, this hermit, you know, guy, you know, and being all emo and shit, right? And I found what was really liberating for me personally was everybody just kind of fucking up so goddamn much in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody screwed up. Even Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Finn screwed up. Poe screwed up, like, several times.
Mm-hmm.
And just that feeling of, like, you know, hopelessness, but also not completely losing hope. Like, even though they kept screwing up, making all these mistakes, that feeling of helplessness contrasted with the fact that there was, by the end of that movie, still hope. And
right. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I really feel like one of the most important lines in the movie is, we are the spark that will light the fire that will burn the First Order down.
The spark, the name of the first episode of the Russian Revolution podcast. I swear that's a coincidence. I'm sorry, continue.
You sly dog. no, but like the point is, the fire isn't here yet, right? It's just a tiny little spark that you have to just keep alive until you can get it where it needs to go. Which is very, by the way, Empire Strikes Back, very, mm-hmm. you know, second entry in a trilogy. But a lot of people seem to be really upset because they wanted certain characters, like, for example, Poe, to remain, like, totally upstanding and perfect. Which, first of all, I don't think people are giving enough credit for the things they don't like to J.J. Abrams. Because part of the reason so much had to happen with Poe in this movie is that in The Force Awakens, he was supposed to die in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, actually, we like Oscar Isaac, which, you know, is fair.
Yeah, totally.
And so kept him alive, but they didn't really do anything. He was just, like, a good guy. So they had to put a lot of character development for him into this one movie, because now here's this character that you have to do something with. But I think I saw someone somewhere on the internet, I will not give any details, who was saying that they hated this movie because it left the characters in kind of the same place that the original trilogy characters were at the end of A New Hope, and that this meant that, like, everything that Luke and Han and Leia had done in the original trilogy didn't matter, which is an incredibly immature way to think about, like, the struggle, right? Like,
that makes me wonder if this whole revolutionary enterprise is just a whole lot of shit. You've given me a lot to think about, Miranda.
Like, you know, just because you win once doesn't mean you've won forever. And the whole point is that everything that actually matters, everything that happens in the universe that actually matters, happens in the time and the space that you buy by standing up over and over again, right? So, like, between the two trilogies, there are kids who got to grow up not in war. There are planets that were not destroyed by the original Death Star. You know, the fact that the struggle kind of returns anew doesn't mean that the earlier victory is meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what you were saying about kind of a sense of failure and losing hope, nonetheless punctuated by a sense of a longer-term ultimate hope, really plays into that. And in some ways, I think that's what this whole trilogy is about. You know, the sort of original trio won a huge victory, but that if we're going to come back to this universe, then that means there's more work to do.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I don't know. I think people decided that Star Wars was about these really specific things. And Star Wars is about many things, but I just found that people decided whatever this movie didn't accomplish to their liking, that was the sole defining factor for the entire thing. And, like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm the first person to say that, like, oh, it wasn't a perfect movie.
Mm-mm.
Like, this wasn't fucking, you know, Citizen Kane. And I remember, like, for example, let's take a specific example here. Spoiler alert, I guess, that moment when I realized that that whole subplot with going to this casino planet and trying to, like, sneak on to onto the ship to
mm-hmm.
do the thing, that turned out to be completely pointless.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember having a moment where I thought to myself, like, oh, was that plot just completely superfluous? And then I stopped caring because I was having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then upon reflection, when I continued thinking about it over the course of the next few days, I realized, well, for me, that just, it seemed, it didn't seem like a plot hole. in the sense that, oh, this just seems like they didn't think about it. Mm-mm. It seemed like, no, this was part of that subversion, of that feeling of, like, we were all expecting for them to mm-hmm. get on there. It'll be just like A New Hope all over again. They'll deactivate the thing
yeah.
and then get away. Maybe, like, have some sort of tragic loss in the, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And instead, it was just failure.
They tried and it didn't work. Which is what happens when you're engaged in, like, revolutionary struggle, you know? Like, the one in a million shot does not always work.
Yeah.
That's
why it's one in a million.
Uh-huh. That's why they call it that. But I also, there is one aspect of that that I do wish they had done differently, which is that, and this is one area where I do have sympathy with some of the people complaining about how Finn was handled. I think they didn't deal enough with kind of the interiority of his character.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment when he confronts and defeats Phasma... More spoilers.
Deal with it, fanboys. It's been like 3 weeks.
Die mad about it. That should be like huge yeah. for his character. And it was filmed like it was huge. Like when he does the big final blow that gets rid of her, he's shot from below. He looks like this amazing, heroic, like larger than life figure, which is wonderful. But the thing is, at no point leading up to that fight has Captain Phasma's name even been mentioned. Like, his yeah. fear of her and his backstory with her has not been brought up once.
That's a really good point.
So it's not built up to, and it doesn't really feel like the emotional and character-building victory for him that it should be, because his the entire kind of plotline of his with Rose post the tasing really has... You get some interiority from her when she talks about, like, her childhood and stuff, but from his end, it's really just him doing stuff and stuff happening. And I think that if they had just dramatized his emotional state more and been more explicit about what is it that he's running from, what is it that he's running to, why is he changing his mind, that whole thing, people would be complaining about it a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
And people would be complaining about the treatment of Finn a lot less. So that is one area where I think they could have done more. But, like, at the same time, when you have, you know, Rose and Finn and a bunch of animals and, like, I'm not sure if they're exactly slaves or indentured servants, but, you know, exploited child laborers destroying the casino planet of, like, the galactic 1%, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah. To be honest, I found that, and I know people have been complaining about that plot for whatever reason, but I found that actually significantly more interesting than the Captain Phasma. Like, I guess they didn't really set up that much of it in Force Awakens. And they didn't really do much of it in this movie, but I, like, kind of didn't care.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I'm saying. Like, they could have made you care.
And, but, like you said, what they did with that subplot, I thought was really, really worth it. And actually, one of the things that occurred to me the other day was, so, like, I was talking with a friend of mine who was, like, a little bit more skeptical. And he's not a monster, don't worry. I'll vouch for him. I've repeatedly told him that when the revolution comes, I'm going to save him, right? So anyway, so he was talking about locations. Star Wars is really good at creating entirely new, literally worlds, planets, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And how in the original series, they did an incredible job with your sort of like, your, you know, the outer rim, your border worlds, very underdeveloped, lots of poverty, scum and villainy, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the prequel trilogy, they tried to do Coruscant and these large, you know, metropolitan sort of like, you know, giant planets with all these things and sure. people and government and whatever. And it was terrible. It was boring. Especially all those Galactic Senate scenes. Like everybody knows those were boring. God. And I thought what this movie, what The Last Jedi did, is they didn't, like, go full-on with that stuff,
mm-hmm.
but they touched on things that the prequels fucked up and just did it so much better as far as depicting this sort of, like, rich people, heavily, densely developed, you know, place of privilege, of wealth, of the capitalists of the Star Wars universe, and dealing with politics in a way that wasn't boring speeches, but it was, like, very... real and very, like, I think the original trilogy was very good and evil
mm-hmm.
and didn't necessarily feel like, oh, this is a world that felt familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.
this is one of the first times, maybe the first time that a Star Wars movie has actually touched into the zeitgeist, I guess, in a way that I felt like, no, this is real, and it doesn't feel forced.
Yeah. So well, like, I saw somebody saying about the Canto Bight, that would be the Casino Planet plotline, that the whole aspect of Rose and Finn getting chased and arrested and thrown in the brig for, you know, a parking violation is, like, insane. And why would, you know, why would the police, like, even bother? And I was like, have you met rich people? Mm-hmm. Like,
come to New York.
Try parking a rust bucket on the lawn of a country club and see what happens to you. Like,
yeah. Try, you know, doing breakdancing on the New York subway. See what happens to you.
Yeah. And actually, so it's, my friend, actually, who's my co-author on the Phantasmatic Radio site, her problem with Canto Bight is that she feels like it's hard to justify sort of highly developed late capitalism in the Star Wars universe, because there's not much evidence of it elsewhere. And her, I think she's explained it to herself by saying that there, the rest of the galaxy is in a sort of Weimar Republic post-World War I state after the fall of the original empire.
Oh, interesting.
Right? Ooh. I haven't had time to really think about that, but
I don't know what, oh God, I'm going to be thinking about that for days.
But I also think, like, there has been, so if you look at the original trilogy versus this one, the kind of economic stage of development has advanced really fast. So, like, Luke and his family, his, like, foster family, are farmers. They're basically, like, subsistence, right? And then the prequels introduce, like, slavery. Although you could argue that with droids it was always there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a whole long ethical
and
ontological debate. And I don't really remember, to be honest, what else economically happens in the prequels.
That's but fine. Then, nobody
but
cares.
But then in The Force Awakens, with Rey, you have a kind of very crude form of, like, wage labor with her work as a scavenger. And then with Canto Bight, you have, like, full-on kind of abstracted war profiteering, right? Like, you know, Han's a smuggler, sure, but this isn't the same kind of, like, bribe me to get through a checkpoint thing. This is, like, I make nonsensical sums of money selling high-tech weapons to both sides, right?
Yeah.
And I think, and this is, again, partly reflective of conversations I've had with this friend I've been talking about, KM, there's an interesting relationship between capitalism and, like, the alienation of generations from one another, in that it used to be that different generations had to rely on one another to survive. So, like, families did childcare and elder care in one extended unit. And the generations, as a result, interacted and knew one another and had a sense of one another's place in their own lives. But when you live in a society that really emphasizes the nuclear family and children, upon reaching adulthood, going off on their own and forming their own households, you know, you don't have, for example, old people in your life as much. You know, you may see your grandparents from time to time, but they're not integrated into your whole social and economic life in the same way. And obviously this is more and less true for different people at different kind of who are in different class roles and so on. But the new trilogy is almost entirely about children who are rebellious, whereas the original trilogy was about the problems of your parents, sort of the threat of the father.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
No, totally.
Okay. I feel like I'm rambling.
You ramble so good.
I should put that on my resume. and so, but, like, Kylo Ren is, like, sort of a parent's worst nightmare, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Even Poe is kind of rebelling against his parent figure, Leia, in this movie. Finn is the First Order's rebellious kid. You know, he was raised by them and brainwashed by them, and he refused to play the role that they expected him to play. Apparently, I am told that in the, like, novelizations and whatever, Hux is, like, the illegitimate son of a First Order officer or an Imperial officer or something. And then Kylo Ren also, in addition to killing his own father and almost killing his own mother, then kills his foster father in the form of Snoke.
I loved that, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That was fucking awesome. But, so just, like, to finish this off before we move into that, my point is that, like, the original trilogy was about the sins of the fathers coming back to haunt you, and this trilogy is about sort of the fear of uncontrollable offspring. It's, like, basically all the main characters are millennials. And I think it makes sense that as the fear of kind of uncontrollable offspring comes to the fore, you get more advanced kind of capitalist formations, because the more advanced capitalism becomes, the less any sense of cause and effect and like control applies, because the systems become so elaborate and abstracted. You're looking at me like
you, like right at that moment, I was like, okay, I think I'm kind of with you, but I kind of lost you a little bit.
All right.
It might be the scotch. This is New Year's Eve.
Yeah, we're drinking.
drinkers, please drink responsibly. Word. So I did want to, well, this will be a good time. I wasn't sure how I was going to fit this in.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to just tell a quick little anecdote. I posted about this on my social media. You might've seen it. So there was like a fun little like controversy of no consequence, which is my favorite kind, recently in this tiny, tiny world of history podcast fans, where the host of a nameless, I shall not name the podcast, an anti-communist podcast of note, that I've like been like, all right, it's not, I don't like it, but whatever, it's fine.
Wait, an anti-communist podcast?
Yeah, anti-communist.
Okay.
Very anti-communist in its political outlook.
Got it.
I listened to it a little bit because I was like interested.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting topic, but I just found it, there's a lot of reasons I just don't like it.
Okay.
One of which is a lot of stupid, unattributable lies. Okay, so I will talk about that some other time. So I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to ignore this person. I occasionally have interactions with them. And then one day we're in these Facebook groups for our podcast history fans. this dude, he posted Star Wars spoilers. I actually missed this part, so I don't actually know what it is he said.
Okay.
Because, I don't know, it was some argument over what, like, some other podcast, I don't know. He decided to post a spoiler. Everybody got angry at him. He then accused them of being interested in children's movies, movies designed only to sell toys. And then he got banned, which is hilarious, and came into other Facebook groups to brag about it.
Oh my God.
And to pitch his show.
Okay.
And just made everything just worse and worse and worse. And it was just like the most frustrating thing in the world, but it brought me a lot of joy.
Yeah.
Because I enjoyed watching this person shoot themselves in the foot. I hope they're listening, honestly. My show's real good. You should keep listening. You learn a lot. But yeah, it was just like, that was like the first sign, that it was going to be the worst people.
Oh yeah.
Who disliked this movie.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of discourse going on. And it's just like, there are some of the criticisms I can understand. Like I made my own criticism about the handling of Finn earlier. Excuse me. Or, like, I can understand some people who really idolize Luke Skywalker, like, having some trouble coming to grips with him sort of irresponsibly running off to the other end of the galaxy.
Yeah.
I think that if you, like, think about it and sit with it, even the biggest fan of Luke Skywalker should be able to deal with this. But, like, I can understand it taking people some time, you know? But some of it, like, so, for example, the plot with Poe and Holdo. Poe... All of this could have been avoided if Holdo had just told Poe what was going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how you look at leadership and, like, a military context and so on, you can say that she had no obligation to do so.
Yeah.
Or you can say that, like, you can't expect, in a situation like this, people just blindly follow you when they don't even know you.
Yeah.
And so I can understand people being frustrated with that, especially if they feel like having Poe... do what he did somehow damages his character. I mean, I don't feel that way. Some people have been saying that they feel like it's casting him in the role of the, like, misogynistic, aggressive man of color versus the virtuous white woman, which I think is not certainly what was intended at all.
I think that's a stretch, personally, as a Guatemalan myself.
I mean, yeah, I'm reporting.
yeah. No, legit.
And, like, I can at least understand that.
Yeah.
Even if I don't agree with it. But some of the stuff where they're just like, oh, it doesn't make sense for Finn to run away because his first act as a character was to endanger himself for the sake of others. It's like, well, but he spent all of The Force Awakens running away, almost.
Yeah.
You know, and then he was in a coma, so it's not like he's had time to think about it, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, he comes back. So there's a lot of things where I feel like people just kind of latched onto their first reaction to something and haven't mulled it over. There's been more stewing than mulling, if you see what I'm saying.
I honestly like stew.
Well, right, but when it's emotional stew, it's usually
ooh, not. Yeah, that's right. That's nasty. I much prefer goulash.
Oh, God, did you see? I think it was the Washington Post tweeted, like, a borscht recipe, and all of these people in the replies were like, what is this Russian propaganda?
Oh, my God. You gotta be kidding
me. Are you signaling Putin?
Oh, God. That's, it's, we've gone mad.
It's just, it's really, we're just too dumb for any of this.
I mean, I am a solidly anti-Putin leftist. Something we have occasionally talked on this show with some other folks in the past is, we mainly talked about Assad apologism, but I feel like that naturally extends into Putin apologism very closely. But, you know, I just find, like, is it possible that we can have, like, a focused, like, constructive criticism of how terrible Vladimir Putin is that doesn't require, like, everything Russian all of a sudden? Like, I
swear... What has borscht ever done to you?
Right?
Beets are innocent.
Is that... Oh, wait, sorry. Yeah, borscht, not goulash, sorry. I'm getting things mixed up. Ugh. Beets are wonderful, dog!
I know.
But yeah, so we got from Star Wars over to beets. I don't know how we got there from here.
I assume that's my influence. I eat a lot of beets.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Star beets. Nope, that's nothing. There's nothing there.
All right. I'm really sorry. Please don't turn off the podcast.
We've known each other too long. I apologize.
Yeah, we got to keep this focused and not just turn into us being a bunch of sillies. Other thoughts on Star Wars: The Last Jedi? I can maybe say a few things, but
you say some things because I have to think of other things to say.
Sure. I guess, you know, for me personally, I just found myself, you know, every time I watch a movie, I have a few minutes where I have to warm myself up into it. Like, I like movies, but I really don't like movies in a lot of ways. I get bored easily, and I just, especially lately, modern, like, Hollywood, there tends to just be a lot of garbage.
Yes.
Like, and I love garbage, but, like, come on, you know? And for me, my experience watching this movie was I had my initial first few moments of doubt, and then all my, like, I don't know, like I said, what I was saying earlier about, like, we find what we didn't like about it, and then we elevated that to be the most important thing in the world. No one talks about the original trilogy and says, you know what was great about the original trilogy was those, you know, really tight plot lines, right? nobody was talking about how great the script was. Yeah. Although there were moments. There were some great lines, mostly written by Carrie Fisher.
Right. So this is actually what I was saying during take one when we realized we were having some problems. Yeah. So Mark Hamill has told this story about how when they were filming Star Wars A New Hope, sometimes he would be thinking, maybe I'd like to change this line. And so he'd go to George Lucas and say, hey, I was thinking about changing this line to X. And George Lucas would be like, no, let's just do it how it's written. And finally, Harrison Ford came to Mark Hamill and was like, just fucking change it. Like, just ad-lib it. He doesn't even notice. Like, just go ahead and do it. So, like, almost all of Han's best lines are Harrison Ford ad-libs.
That makes so much sense.
Like, great kid, don't get cocky. That's not in the script.
It's a great line.
It is a great line. But the point is...
What about get moving, Goldenrod? Are you going to be a permanent resident?
I don't know.
Okay.
You're
useless to me.
I know. I'll just jump out this window now. But... my point is they were like actively subverting George Lucas's writing, even in the very first movie. Like, it's not.
Which is why it was good.
Yeah, exactly. Something else that I think is really good in The Last Jedi is that they have, in a lot of ways, it's kind of reenacting The Empire Strikes Back.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the same beats, just kind of taken at a different angle or taken in a different direction. And so when Rey goes to, like, redeem Kylo Ren, it's parallel to Luke's attempt to redeem Darth Vader, right?
Yeah.
But obviously it doesn't work. And I actually think that's really great. Like, a lot of people have objected to the force bond between Kylo and Rey and, like, saying that it's making him too sympathetic and, you know, because he's, like, the personification of bad fanboys and Gamergate and toxic internet, all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
But the point is, she tries, she makes an honest effort, which is, like, morally a very good thing to do, right? To try to allow for possibility and for hope. And then when it doesn't work, she quite literally shuts the door in his face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how it ends. It's not ambiguous. She made
my roommate was actually telling me she saw it with her younger sister, who's about 14, and was using that relationship as a very specific example of gaslighting. Sorry.
What have you done?
I didn't mute everything on this audio file. So anyway, maybe nobody heard that. So yeah, so she used it as an example of gaslighting.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a whole conversation about, like, yeah, a guy ever starts talking to you that way, you end up in that sort of relationship, you put the kibosh on that immediately.
See? Constructive. Positive.
Oh, gosh, right?
Yeah.
We're coming on towards the end of our time here. So do you have any last thoughts about The Last Jedi or anything in general? Man, why people be calling me?
Why your phone not on silent?
I'm a monster.
Are you sure you've been doing this for a while?
Listen, all right, it's New Year's Eve. I went on a marathon yesterday doing the Russian Revolution episode. I did a 10-hour day working on that. I'm a little... There's no heat in the apartment.
Okay.
My life... Our pets' heads are falling off. It's, like, all a thing. So, anyway, last thoughts.
Well, now I just feel terrible. So, well done on the guilt trip there. Last thoughts. I guess I would also just like to say that, certainly on a visual level, this is the best Star Wars movie.
Oh, yeah.
Although, I also think it's hilarious that that one guy in the trench... on Crait, like, touches the ground and tastes it and goes, salt. And I understand they want the audience to know that it's salt, but I think they would have figured it out while digging the trench, perhaps. The only other really significant point that I want to bring up is I think the role of, like, animals and ecology in this movie is really interesting. I think the way that they tried to explain, like, what the Force is was perhaps my favorite that's ever been done in the whole movie series. But from the porgs to whatever the sort of camel horse things that they were riding on Cantobite right. were, to the, like, salt foxes on Crait, there's this consistent theme of animal life helping them out.
Yeah.
And being on their side, which I have all kinds of elaborate theories about, like, exactly how the Force goes about maintaining balance and how that plays into this kind of move away from the idea that what matters is a select class of Jedi Knights and more toward kind of the Force works through whoever and whatever it can. But, you know, at the close to the end, when that last remaining fox is kind of guiding the remaining rebels out of the cave to safety, I was actually really moved by that.
Yeah.
I really liked, because the natural world has never been a big part of Star Wars.
Yeah, it hasn't.
And even, you know, the montage where, you know, Rey is telling Luke what she feels when she reaches out through the Force. And it's like life and death, violence and harmony. And you have all these shots of, like, plants and the water and decay and growth and all these things. I think that's a really fruitful direction to be taking this. And that's something I'd really like to see more conversation about, because it's not a sort of thematic area I'm expert in, but I think it's interesting.
Up with nature, down with midichlorians. Miranda, thank you so much for being on The Movements.
Thank you for having me.
Cool.
Happy New Year.
That part might not make it.
The Movements is a leftist history and politics podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Movements Pod, and support the show by donating at patreon.com/movementspod. Policías a escuchar esta canción.